Hey everybody, welcome to Buzzing About Romance. On this episode, I'm giving you a quick shot of romance, but author spotlight edition. And on this author spotlight, I am joined by Amanda. Hi, Amanda.
Hello.
And Denise Williams. Hello, Denise.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So Denise Williams wrote her first book in second grade, I Hate You, and its sequel, I Still Hate You, featured a tough, funny heroine, a quirky hero, winty banter, and a dragon. Minus the dragons, they're still the books she likes to read. After penning those early works, she finished second grade and eventually earned a PhD in education. When she's not writing, reading, and thinking about love stories, she spends her days working in university administration. Ooh, I'm sorry. After growing up a military brat around the world and across the country, Denise now lives in Des Moines, Iowa, with her husband, son, and a dog so quirky she really needs to end up in a book. Well, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
And we are going to do some get to know you questions, and then we're going to talk about your newest release, Just Our Luck. Excuse me.
Here for it. I'm a Leo. I love to be known.
I am a Leo also.
Oh. Exciting.
Mm-hmm. I'm an August baby.
Late July here, but I think if you're a Leo, you get to claim a couple different months.
You just can claim the whole like season.
Yeah.
So what initially drew you to romance as a writer?
You know, I've always loved love stories. If I think back to even like early stories I read as a kid, or those like Babysitter's Club books I binged back in the
love,
90s. Like
love.
I was always in it for where's the love story? Like, okay, the murder's interesting, the mystery is great.
Because Logan loves
It's
Marianne.
a babysitter, cool. But where is the love story? What is going to happen with Logan and Marianne? And so that has always been the draw for me. I've always been pulled to that. So as a early reader, I read a lot of romance, probably before I maybe should have, and probably some romances that were not 100% appropriate or that held up to time. But then I stepped away from it. I read other things. I read thrillers. And then, as I mentioned, I was in graduate school. And so my reading was largely academic, as my writing was academic. And I didn't come back to romance until I started commuting every day. And I listened to a bunch of things on audio. And then I quickly found romance audiobooks and I never turned back. And I was listening to a Mariana Zapata book, Wait For It.
Okay.
And I thought, you know what? I wonder if I could write this. And then in 2016, the world was, you know, 2016-ing. I was a new mom. I was in the middle of a big research project. And I just felt buried. I felt buried in what everybody else needed from me. And I wanted something to be an outlet for my creativity. And that's when I was like, you know what? I'm going to sit down and write something. My kid goes to bed on time. Like, I was blessed with a really good baby sleeper. And I don't know why I'm crossing my fingers. He's 8 now. But
it's just that like gut reaction of like he's still
yes,
gonna
100%,
keep
like, oh,
sleeping
please let
good.
it keep happening. And I just sat down to write, and it felt so good that I did it night after night after night, and it turned into my debut novel. And so I don't know that I ever planned to be an author. I didn't ever plan to be a romance author. I didn't think that was in my life bingo card, but it still feels so great to sit down and put the words on page and write a love story and create this happily ever after for other people, especially in a world where so many people's happily ever afters feel incredibly challenged right now, that I just feel like that's a really powerful and kind of affirming thing to be able to do. And so those are kind of the, I don't know, that's the steps that led me to writing romance. But folks are like, oh, what was your life plan to get into that? I was like, no, I really fell ass backwards into this career. And I'm glad that I did.
There are a few authors out there who have said like when they had kids, like they felt like they needed to express themselves and they needed something to do. And it, but like with a newborn, like it is hard to really do anything. I mean, they do sleep a lot, but it's, you're so tired.
Yes, 100%.
But having a good sleeper is key, because we were very fortunate to have good sleepers as well.
Yeah, I didn't talk about it so much when my friends all had little ones, but now I feel okay to brag. Like, oh no, he was sleeping through the night at 1 month or 6 weeks or whatever it was. But that did help. But I can't vouch for how good those early drafts were, because I'm sure I was on, you know, very little sleep. But again, I don't know, it filled my cup, but it still does.
Yeah. So when you are writing, do you plan or do you pants?
In my heart, I love to pants. I love to sit down and know a vague roadmap and then just go and see what happens. But I am traditionally published, and at least my publisher, Berkeley and Penguin Random House, like to see a plan before they give you any money. So now I am an outliner, and I love the science of outlining. I am a spreadsheet girly. I am
Oh, yeah.
anything that can be organized or filed or
Oh,
anything
Amanda
like
is a
that is
spreadsheet
usually deep in
girly.
my heart. So I love the science of plotting, but as a writer, the pants for me is where my heart is.
Amanda loves a spreadsheet.
I do love a spreadsheet, so I can totally see where you're coming from on that, so.
Oh my gosh, I could do full interviews on my love of spreadsheets. I wrote a local bookseller, a storyhouse book pub in Des Moines, had Ross Gay come in for his Book of Delights, the tour. He came in
Oh.
virtually. And so she had a bunch of us local authors write our own essay of delight. And I wrote about my favorite Excel formulas. And the reaction was hilarious. There were so many people that were just came up to me after and like, have you tried this? Have you tried this? Have you tried this?
That's amazing.
You should write a book with one of your heroines and their love of Excel and spreadsheets.
Yeah.
I have thought about it. There's some offhand Excel love given from some of my different characters, but there really should be a whole book because I wrote a program in Excel that is essentially like it could map out a spicy scene. So I set
Oh.
like randomization filters and you put in how many people and their names, and it's got like a big kind of bench of actions and body parts, and then you just like hit randomize and it comes up with something kind of like the dice that people used to have.
That's amazing.
You're like speaking Amanda's love
Yeah.
language right now.
I'm like
And
geeking out right now. I can't even talk.
actually, one of my friends, she loves Excel also, and she's like, I will show you anything you need to know.
It is truly like if someone could ask me about my books, and that's very cool, but then they could ask me about Microsoft Excel. And I'm like, I don't work for Microsoft, but let me
You're
bring
like,
you
they
into my
could
home
sponsor me
to talk
though,
about this.
because I love it so much.
If they
That's
would, like
amazing.
the index match is just like prime for a romance story. That's one of the formulas.
Yeah, I'm gonna need this now, Denise. I'm gonna need you
Okay.
to write it.
And honestly, there are so many people out there who have their love of Excel, and like you would not, I mean, 20 years ago, before like the dawn of social media and the way that it is now, like you never would have known it. But they're like, I got stuck on like spreadsheet Tiki Talk the one day. I don't know how I
Yes.
got there, but it is all over the place.
Spreadsheet Nation is one of my favorite accounts to follow when I get back on there. And I think they're on all the other channels too, but they put out a calendar, like a wall calendar, that was very like, I don't know, Zen looking photos, like beautiful rocks with water rushing over them, and then an Excel
Amanda's
formula
totally
and
writing
like what
it
it does and how
down.
to do it.
Well, and I've seen those like mats for like the desks, like with all the cheats. I don't have a love of Excel. I use it almost every day, but I can honestly say that I could take it or leave it. But that's just me personally. I'm more of a creative than a like. When I was younger, I got S's in coloring because I colored outside the lines. And that hasn't really changed. Well, excuse
Like.
me. So, is there a piece of advice that present author you would give past author you?
It would be don't read your reviews, which, to be fair, lots of people told me when I was a new author, and I have told lots of new authors, and not a single one of us ever listens to it, at least at first. But I think I would harp on that, and in part because my background's in academic writing, and the training for academic writing is you send out what you wrote, and then people criticize it. They critique it sometimes, but and then you get it back, and you kind of roll in that feedback and that critique. Like that's kind of what we do. And so I was like, I'm used to that. I've had harsh critiques before, but there's something different with fiction. I don't know what it is, but what I encourage authors to do, and what I would probably tell my past self to do, is like wait a few minutes before you go read the reviews because you're gonna do it. Wait till there's some of them there. Don't go read them as they come in. Because then you really get to see a mixed balance to your book, because some people will love it and adore it and shout about it, and some people will hate it and pan it. And a lot of people will be somewhere in the middle where you're going to see like what they really loved and what they really resonated and what maybe didn't click. But I think sometimes it's so easy to take a negative review personally that this person hated my book and everybody's going to hate it. And should I be writing? And to just internalize that. And there are definitely negative reviews from my debut book 5 years ago that I could probably like narrate to you from memory because they live
Oh
rent
no.
free.
It just
But
sticks.
anymore, it's sort of like, well, that's okay. Like that whole balance is what this whole thing is based on. And it's such an easier thing to not get stuck in that loop. But that's probably the advice I would give.
Well, like one thing we say on the podcast is not every book is for everybody. Like you can like even within like the podcast contributors, like some of us love certain things and others do not. And some of us read some really bonkers things and others do not. And it's one of those things like that is the magic of the written word, is there is something for everybody. Not everybody is going to like it. Some people love it, some people will hate it, but there is something for everybody to enjoy.
Oh, yeah. And when I'm going to buy, just for my own reading, if I'm gonna, I don't usually read reviews before I buy, but if I do, I always go to the 3 stars. I always click on the 3-star reviews and see what those people had to say, because I think that is where I feel like I get the most information about, is this going to be what I like or
I
not?
typically
But
do
those.
the threes and the twos, 'cause like why are they not liking it? In threes, it's like they like it, but sometimes like something doesn't like resonate with them. But like the twos, I'm like, those are the ones that are like really like doubling down. So it's like there's too much sex in this book. Yes, please. I will click on that one.
I got kind of a 1-star too much sex review from Kirkus, and that was maybe like the best review I like the most that I loved from
You're
Kirkus
like,
ever.
thank you. Nice.
Why, yes, thank you. There is a lot of sex in this book. It's interesting too, because I say I don't read reviews, but then on the academic side, my academic side, when I am going to pick up a book from somebody else, or I'll go and pull 5-star reviews sometimes for friends and compile like bits and pieces for them. Is that the kind of characters of the book and the identity of the author like definitely skews, it seems like, how I'd love to do a research project on that. That's not my area of research and that's not my job, but like I know when I go read books, like reviews for books by Black authors, those reviews are going to generally be lower stars than I would say a comparable book by a white author, like on Goodreads or something. And that, so I always kind of take that into mind too. Same, like if it's a queer story or a character with a story with like an older character or something like that, is like numerically you see those go lower. And so it's interesting to see like how people frame it. Just again, from my academic side, I'm like, oh, I'd love to like dig into this and do a textual analysis. I won't again because it's not my job. How would I even do that? But I don't know.
You're like, I'll
I kind
set
of
up
keep
a
those things in mind too when
spreadsheet.
I'm reading reviews. Yeah.
Can you share any writing rituals or habits that you have to help stay focused? And since you have like you have a day job, so I mean you're trying to like write like intermix with that while raising like your family.
Yeah, so you know, most my first book came out in 2020, and the Just Our Luck just came out, and it's book number 10. And I'd say my writing journey has been so all over the place because of what was going on in my life that I'm not too precious about my rituals. So, Do You Take This Man was my third full-length novel, and I wrote all the sex scenes first. There's like 13 of them. And because I was writing it on my couch between Zoom meetings with Paw Patrol as the soundtrack to my life, because we were in lockdown. And I was like, I need to write adult things. But in other spaces, like I write in the airport a lot, I travel a lot, I can write on planes. I write over my lunch break, on the weekends, at night, early in the morning. So I pull in my time for writing where it is, kind of with the rest of my life. So in that, I can dictate on my phone when I'm commuting. I can, again, type while I'm waiting for a meeting to start in the airport. I'm not too precious about any of that. But when I'm on deadline, the bag of Mike and Ike's gets larger as the deadline approaches, and the bottle of Diet Coke gets more substantial. So that's probably my only like true ritual. Other than I write in the Scrivener program, but I always like to edit in Microsoft Word.
Yeah, there's a lot of authors that really enjoy that Scrivener because it helps track everything, like.
Oh yeah, I love it. I wish I had. I have to always recommend it to people who are working on their PhDs or doing like academic writing, because just some of the ways it organizes your data is so helpful when you're pulling in lots of sources and resources too.
That's interesting.
It is. It's like, now can you connect that to like Microsoft? I'm actually not sure how those programs work. I just know that authors love them. Can you like integrate your programs or?
I don't know. I don't think so. Pro Writing Aid is what I use instead of like Grammarly or something like that, like when I'm editing, and that can be integrated and you can export to a Word document, but I don't know if those two integrate. I keep them separate, but I might just be a Luddite and living in old times, and they may have introduced that feature 10 years ago, and I just don't know about it.
It's okay. I don't really understand any of those features, so it's always like I'm always like asked the questions, but I don't understand how it works.
Well, you sounded very knowledgeable of
Well,
Scrivener.
thank you. I fake it very well. So let's chat Just Our Luck. So it released March 25th, 2025. It's fake dating, small town. oh, excuse me. There is a bakery, well, donut shop and bakery. Like there, the hero has come home to help take care of his grandfather. Let's talk the cover first.
Sure. So,
Amanda.
I love the cover of this book. I've loved all the covers of all my books, but Liz Parks is the artist, and she's always done my pre-order art, the character art. And so I messaged her and she said, I'm pulling back from doing pre-order art. And I was like, do you do book covers? And she's like, well, yeah. And I was like, okay. So then I usually about a year before the book comes out, they do a cover conference at Berkeley, and they get all your ideas and they bring the art team together. And so I was like, can hear my all my ideas, but can we get Liz? And they did. And I just love the energy she captured. It's got kind of a little bit more of a towards like a clinch cover, like they're holding on to each other, they're making eye contact. I think there's actually so much of the characters in that image too. So Kieran is, I don't know, I feel like the dude in the clinch is sometimes like the sexy background noise. And I think he is, but he's very like straight. He's very solid, like back straight, shoulders straight. And that's kind of how he moves through the world. Like he's a very sort of type A character, but you see him literally like being pulled into this by Sybil, who is wearing this flouncy, flirty yellow skirt and this cute crop top. And when this would have taken place, it would be February in Iowa, which is not normally what you would wear in February in Iowa, but Sybil would. And not that you get any of that context in the book, but the colors are so vibrant. I just absolutely adore this cover.
Yeah, I mean,
And
I
they
think it
have
really popped.
faces.
Yeah, it really pops like by itself, and then as you read the story and you realize how spot on just it embodies them both. And then on top of that, then the little details inside, you know, the donut and the hearts on the chapters, like it's just such a it's such a pretty book. It's just like every little piece of it is it just fits.
Yeah, and Liz always, I think she just brings that to her art. Like she's done covers for other folks, but has done art for a lot of folks like Christina Lauren and Helen Huang. And I don't know, she just brings like this really beautiful energy between the characters that I just love. So I'm hoping she'll be doing the next one too, and so I'll be really excited to see what comes of that one.
Yeah, it's just the colors are so, it's so bright and vibrant, and it's like you have that donut shop vibe with it, but also like you see such a difference between, because Kieran is kind of a, it's very rigid, but not like rigid at the same time. And Sybil is not, like she is an ADHD, chaotic, delightful human being, which that, like her character arc, I just really enjoyed like start to finish, because as like you're reading the story, you find like she's done a lot of temp jobs. She But it's one of those things where she just has not found her niche that really helps her settle and focus. And as somebody who is undiagnosed ADHD, I can totally like understand that.
I think, well, I don't think I know. Like Sybil, especially as a character, is very different from me, actually. She was hard to write because I'm probably more on the grumpy side of this couple. I'm probably more like Kieran personally. But I loved writing this character because she felt so real to me in that some of her actions, especially in the beginning of the book, are like, what are you doing? Like, I'm sure readers sometimes are reading this and you're like, they want to shake this person. But you're also in her head and you see her rationale and her motivation and why she's doing these things. And to me, that felt very real to write this person who has such good intentions. Like she is a positive person. She wants to impact people well and treat people well and is really, really trying to do these things. And someone who just can't figure out how to do that until she gets more of a roadmap. As you move through the book, as she figures out her own diagnosis, but also finds somebody who validates how she approaches things. So she can stop always trying to do it right. And then she can really do it well for who she is and how she moves through the world.
So there was one line in this book that I just really loved, and it comes from Kiernan's grandfather. Because so Sybil is helping out in the donut shop, and it's not like it's her first day there. It's not going super well, but the grandfather says, "Everyone is teachable. We just need to find the right kind of teaching." And that resonates so much because I have two kids. They learn very differently. They have very different personalities, and it's like one of them is very tactile and one can sit and listen and it all soaks in. And it's like, it's so true. And like talking to parents, seeing different kids, like actually like as like adults, my husband is a very tactile learner also. And so it's like, it's so true. And it's frustrating that people don't see that and understand that. But the fact that like it is the grandfather saying that, and he's like, you didn't learn right or well either at first go. And it's like you kind of forget, like when you're learning, you have to figure out how to learn for yourself as well.
Oh, absolutely. And I've worked in education for 20 years. I'm in administration and not working with students now, but I've taught for most of that and studied teaching and studied learning. And you know, being an effective educator, an effective teacher is finding ways that your students learn best and like mixing it up so different people in the room can take in the information and then apply it in different ways. And so I do think that's especially true for folks who are neurodivergent or who are other bringing other things like to a learning space, like that might be diagnosed or undiagnosed or part of their brain chemistry. But I think it's also true for all of us that we're going to learn different things in different ways. Like chemistry for me was not a hands-on activity. It actually wasn't an anything activity, and I dropped the class. But the way I learned that was so different than the way I learned like knitting, which was so different from the way that I learned teaching when I took like a class on actual teaching methods. And I think that that is just a truth universally known to good teachers, but so often forgotten in like educational systems. And so like folks like me who like I was quiet and I like to raise my hand, K-12 education in America was built for me. Like I mean, not in some other ways because I'm a woman and I'm black, but my personality, like I would sit quietly and raise my hand and do my homework and capital T authority or capital A authority was the teacher. That was built for me. My brother was ex the exact opposite. And I think that's true for so many people in our education system or the education system of the past.
So
So
one
quick
of the
question. Oh,
no, go
sorry, go
ahead.
ahead.
No, go
No,
ahead.
I was gonna ask. So I think we all kind of wonder what our lives would be like if we won the lottery, right? So how did you, was this because did you come up with them winning the lottery like because you thought about that, or is there another specific like reason you wanted to use the lottery?
Yeah, it actually came from a meme that a friend of mine shared on Facebook in like 2017. I don't know what I was even doing on Facebook then, but she posted this, my friend Amber, And it said something to the effect of, I don't need a boyfriend. I just need $10 million and a really good donut. And I saved it. And at the time, I thought, oh my gosh, what a great concept for a book. And I sketched out immediately, like, okay, what if it was a donut shop and they won lottery? And then they were pretending to date to get good PR for the lottery. And I just kind of sketched out some things. And then I set it aside for years. But it was always in the back of my head. And the working title was actually $10 million in a donut when I was drafting it. And so that's actually where it came from. And I loved that idea as I was building the book. It didn't start like this, but as I was building the book, I love that idea of thinking you know exactly what you need, the donut and the inflation. It went from 10 million to 250 million. But thinking I know exactly what I need and it's going to fix all my problems. And then especially for Sybil, she's actually a little paralyzed by the hugeness of this. Like she doesn't want to do it wrong because it would be so public. And she knows there'd be so much judgment on her. But I think for a lot of us, we're like, yes, I would spend it all on all this. But then I think the reality, at least for me, probably would be like, oh my gosh, what do I? I'm
Yeah,
just
I
going to
think
stick this in my
so.
checking account, pretend it's not there for a minute. Like, what do I do with this? And I think that, so that's actually where the inspiration came from, was that meme. And that story, again, has been in the back of my head for years and years and years until it was time. And like, I think it's the time to write this one. This would be a great one to start a new universe of stories.
Yeah. So it's funny, like as I was reading this book, so I play the lottery every once in a blue moon. And so like we have this running joke in our house, like my kids will ask for ridiculous things. And I'm like, if we win the lottery, I will do that for you. And my husband's like, you know that's never gonna happen. And my oldest is like, but it could.
It could.
So we were driving home from swim practice the one day, and my oldest is like, so if we actually did win the lottery, what would you do with the money? I'm like, oh, well, this is what I would do. I'm like, I would put this and this and this here to save it, and then we would do this. And he's like, oh, you would save a lot. I'm like, we would not be spending millions of dollars just to spend money. Like, that's insanity. He's like, no. Like, I would set you up for life. Don't worry. But yeah, but it's
And
like a
I
running
think the
joke in our
same thing. And
house.
I don't know if that comes with age or age and maybe being a little more boring or just like, but I'm like, oh, I would invest this much and I would save this much and I'd invest in property and I would, here's what I would give to philanthropically. And I'm a fundraiser. That's my job now. I raise money for scholarships at a university. And so I think a lot about that, like that kind of impact. And I'm a Leo. I want my name on something. Like I want my name on a building somewhere.
Oh, I didn't
But
even
yeah,
think
it is
about
fun to
that one.
fantasize about.
Yeah, but like so for the at the during the Super Bowl, like my nephew was over and we were watching the game and he goes, "So next year, if we win the lottery, can we go to the Super Bowl?" I was like, "You bet you. We will go to the Super Bowl if we win the lottery. I will gladly buy flights to California and Super Bowl tickets."
That.
And my
But
husband's like, "You know that's not going to happen, but it
it
could."
could. It could.
But that was one of those things, like she's so like scared of the money almost that it really kind of resonates with you. Like, what would you do if it actually happened?
I liked that. And I think in early drafts, she like went hog wild with the money. And I think that's a fun story to write too. But I thought for this character, this felt more realistic that she would have that like, oh my gosh, okay, this did solve so many of my problems, and now I can solve so many of problems for others, and then realizing that that's not actually necessarily the case. And I think some of those things that actually happen to people who win the lottery.
Yeah, I thought it was very, it felt very realistic the way it happened for her. And I think it's more realistic for a lot of people than what you might think. Like that paralysis of not knowing what to do if that were to happen to you.
And I think if I look across all my books, honestly, I like to write realistic. And so like the fantasy is some of the actual interactions between the people, which are fantastical in that we should all have that. But I think I like to write those like stories that really feel grounded in reality, where you're like, oh no, like that could happen to me, or that did happen to me, or that's a real life issue I'm dealing with. And so when folks always ask, like, which of your books should I start with? And I was like, well, how much of an escape do you want versus how much do you want to like seat yourself in the middle of a love story that could be happening to your neighbor? Because I think that does tend to be like where I write from and where I enjoy reading from too.
Well, and luck is such a common theme throughout this. Like, they find, like, at the beginning of the book, they both find a penny on the same day. Like, she randomly buys this lottery ticket and then she leaves it in the donut shop. And there's this, like, whole, like, chaos that follows that. And just one of, and then during, so her sister is getting married, like, throughout the book, like, she's planning her wedding. And the speech, the maid of honor speech, I loved that. It was so heartfelt and so sweet. Excuse me, but so civil at the same time.
I always put weddings in my books because I love weddings, and I think I really just like writing speeches. And so I mean, I get to write them for my characters, but I did love that speech because, to not spoil anything for folks, like I think that the crux of that is really looking at what luck really is finding the people and the circumstances that lift you up. And I think that definitely is, I don't think, I know that is a theme through this book of there's a line early on, and I think it is Kieran's grandfather, his grandfather's friend, says to Kieran, like, sometimes luck looks different than you think it will. And that's ultimately, you know, what is the case, that they both find these lucky pennies and they win the lottery and have a great one night stand at a donut shop, and all of these like things are happening, but the ultimate lucky thing is finding the person who helps them view themselves in a positive light, and finding, you know, that other human who helps you, I don't know, like helps you see yourself in a way that's really fantastical and magical. And I think there's so much power in that.
Yeah, there definitely is. And like her mom, the relationship with her mom is kind of strained, but they also have a moment, which I thought was really nice, because it's one of those things, like, as a parent, like, you, it's sometimes tough to see your kids struggle. And it's hard to like share the positives when sometimes the negatives are like front and foremost. But like there's a really good moment with like her mom, and it's like I had a hard time with her mom throughout a lot of the book, but then after that I was like, I can see where she's coming from.
Yeah, and I think the mom, I tried to write as somebody who loves her kids, like, but she doesn't know how to show her care for Sybil in the same way that she does for her daughter Grace, who is very similar to her. And I think that is something I've heard from certainly not every person with ADHD, but some, like, that my parents were always telling me to like get it together, like having these sort of neurotypical rigid expectations on somebody, and then the person always felt like they couldn't meet them, and that sort of became the dynamic. And so I had empathy for the mom, even when the mom, when you could clearly see, was doing harm to Sybil, was
She was
also
trying.
she was trying, she didn't know. And I love that she at the end of the book, she admits that she didn't know, and she's like, this is what I did wrong, and this is what I want to do better. And like trying to articulate the things that she hasn't been communicating in terms of, I'm always proud of you. I didn't know how to show that. And admitting that, which I think is a hard thing to do. And I do love that moment because that family dynamic is hard for Sybil, but that's really where Sybil came from. And her sister the same way, like her sister clearly adores her and they look out for each other. But her sister also doesn't always kind of get Sybil either, in like where she's coming from or what's motivating her. And so I think that put Sybil in an interesting place when one of her motivations is she wants to be taken seriously by her family and has the misguided view that this donut man is going to be the one who makes her look serious to her family.
And I also like that she's, even though she has a little bit of, strife with her family and them not understanding her, but I love the fact that she has friends and like her found family that do understand her. So I didn't, I feel like she, at least has that support system as well. So I felt like she was very fortunate in the people in her life, just like Kieran was. I feel like the supporting cast that you had going on for both of them were just, it was just made up of fantastic people.
Well, and that was something too. It's like there's a, it's hard for her mom and her sister to understand because they are very
Different.
put together and different. And it like it is to see it from the outside, but you can still see that they have a decent relationship. So it's like there is that struggle, but they do show their care. They're just, especially like the sister. The sister is definitely better about the mom, and like the fiance, like he welcomes Sybil like wonderfully, and I really enjoyed him. So it's like I think that he helped Grace understand Sybil more in the way that he treated her. And so it showed Grace like Sybil is not this flake who doesn't know what she's doing. She just is like she's struggling with it herself.
There is a scene. Warren is the sister's fiance. He has a really small role, but I loved his character like so much. And there's a line early on in the book, and Sybil has like $17 in her checking account, and she's just picked up all these like past due bills from her mom's house. And Warren is like a very direct communicator, and he's like, "Do you need money?" And she's like, "Oh, no, I'm fine." And she's like, "Anybody in my family would see through that lie immediately." But Warren takes thing at face value. Because he's from a family where they're just honest with each other. And that's not like the direct quote, but I just love that those scenes where he has with she has with Warren a couple times where she's like, there would be no follow-up questions.
Well,
And I love writing side characters. I think that's such a fun way to round out the different dimensions of a person, looking at not only in fiction, but in real life, like who do we spend our time with? Who do we know? Who knows us deeply? Who challenges us? And in what ways do they challenge us? And I think that when you look at those pieces around a person, it gives that character or that human just so much more roundness and dimension, and we get to learn so many things about them. And selfishly, I'm the way I write side characters is I think about like what would their love story be, and then I'm like, oh, now I want to write the book of Granddad and Tom and all of these folks because that's sort of how I think about who that person is outside of their friendship with this person.
Well, and with Kieran, like he's so focused and like really wants to like help and do good, and I love his sister though, because she's like questions him throughout the book, are you sure? Like your end goal should be your end goal. Like, are you sure you still want to be a doctor? Are you sure you want to go back? Like, why? Like, what is motivating you to go back to that when you seem settled here, but also not settled at the same time?
Yeah, and so Kieran, both him and his sister had a hard childhood. Their mom was an addict and struggled with money, and they end up living with their grandfather. And Kieran, from an early age, has always felt like he should and had to fix things. He had to take care of things. He had to take care of his sister. He had to, you know, it's part of a part of people who have been abandoned. It's part of personality trait that he had to do well in school. And so Kieran is a rigid character. And I think that to me, again, felt pretty natural because that's his mindset is I have to be the one to hold things together. And he's then put in a place where things are falling apart. And he, as an overachiever his whole life, feels like he's failing. And so kind of that's where he comes into this. And I love that his sister does challenge him on what do you really want? What do you really need? And he admits at some point in the book, like, yeah, she has healthier coping strategies than I do. And she does. But also, the grandfather and some other people in his life challenge him on that too and help him to kind of trust that he actually has permission to move outside of that rigid goal of this is the way I take care of everybody. And this is the way that I become a fully realized person because he has the set idea in his head that there is one way that I do that, and this is the goal. And you know, what do you do when that goal isn't working out, when it's not going to happen? And I love that journey for him because I think that's so real for so many people that you have this goal in your head and you know exactly how it's going to work out and you work toward it and then it doesn't. And you're left in this space of uncertainty that is so anxiety inducing that it pushes you to do things that you might not otherwise do, like try to fix all your problems by fake dating this woman you had a one night stand with for romance reasons. But more than that, to question or not question his decisions about medical school and his future as a physician. And again, without giving away spoilers, I love that about his journey. And I think that for anybody who's ever been in that place, that will probably feel pretty real to you.
Well, and I think that's the thing with Kiernan. Like, he needed the permission to not move forward with that. Like, he needed somebody to say, it's okay if you don't go back. But he needed them to say it like 17 times.
Which again, I think is, I don't know, I think about goals I've had, and you get in such that mindset of this is the only way that I can be. This is who I have to be. And I even think I've worked with college students for years, and I used to work in a residence hall, work with students, and it had a lot of sorority women in the hall. It was the University of Georgia, and the Greek system there is very, very embedded, lots of legacy. And we would get women who my first interaction with them was they were crying because they didn't get into the sorority that they had been dreaming of getting into their whole life and or for so long. And they felt that that was going to be such a big part of their identity. And I don't, there's something so powerful in that reframing of your identity and who you are and what this experience is going to be. And I think that that's a lot of what Kieran is doing. So he is the grump. He is more rigid. Like that's intentional. But I think there's some honesty in that in terms of what he's struggling with and how Sybil challenges him and how his growing feelings for Sybil, this person who feels so wrong for him. Like this isn't even a spoiler because it happens in the first chapter. Like she accidentally robs him in like the first 5 pages of the book. Like there are so many things about her that feel so wrong and for him feel like this is a mistake to fall for this person. But then he's challenged by the fact that he does still fall for this person and she ends up being kind of perfect for him.
Yeah, because he's so type A in so many things, and she's chaos, but not bad chaos. Like, and it is hard to bring those two together sometimes, but it
And
works
I
really
actually
well.
stayed away from Grumpy Sunshine books for a long time because what I didn't like was when you had somebody who was sunshine and rainbows, and I don't believe in shoes, and time is not even a construct. And then you had somebody who wears a suit to work every day and loves spreadsheets and alphabetizes their sock drawer. Like you had those two people. Okay, great. Lots of chaos to come together. But then when they would come together, and the whole premise was the sunshine person basically teaching the grump to not be the way they are, which those stories are fine. Like people love those. But I actually didn't like those because I wanted the grumpy person reading it to have like that vindication of like you're valid too. Like you can still wear shoes and fall in love with this person and they don't need to love your spreadsheets. But for me, I stayed away from those stories for a long time because I didn't like that dynamic that the goal was to change the other person. And so and I don't even remember when I remember the first time I read one that I was like, no, this is it. This is what I wanted. And it was again that idea of finding that total opposite who makes you view yourself differently versus being a different person.
Who enhances your character, not changes it.
Yeah, exactly.
Amanda, do you have any other questions?
No, I think we covered everything that I was looking at.
So what's next?
So next, the book is, I don't know if we've released the title yet, but it's called The Redo List. And if you've read Just Our Luck, it is Deacon's story. So Deacon is, oh, I loved your expressions.
We're
Deacon
excited.
is one of Sybil's roommates. He is, oh, what's a kind word, right? He's a rake. How's that? He is a veteran. He is the comic relief and the supportive friend. He gets around is your impression. And that is his character in this book. And there's so much more to him. And so his book will be next. It is a sibling's best friend love story with a little bit of an age gap. And the premise is that this woman in her early to mid-20s has been with the same person since middle school. She thought her whole life would be spent with this person. And then they have a very bad breakup in a very public place. And she ends up as a meme, this image of her. And so she is escaping both the fallout of the breakup, and trying to run away from this notoriety of being on this meme and agrees to dog sit for her brother while he's deployed. At the same time, the brother, Cruz, who's deployed, asks his best friend, Deacon, who's recently out of the military, hey, can you check on my sister? Can you make sure she's okay? And then through romance reasons, they decide, or she decides, that all of her firsts were with this ex. So much of her whole life has been with this ex, and she wants a redo on all these firsts. And so throughout the book, she does a redo on all of these different things. He helps her with a lot of them. Some of them are spicy firsts, and some are just really romantic firsts. But both of those people are actually redefining who they are after they've left something that was so core to their identity. So he's left the Air Force and his role as a pararescue jumper, and she has left this relationship, and then they kind of find this in each other. So that one will be out in February of 2026.
I'm very excited about this.
I had so much fun writing this, and Deacon is a fun character to write.
Yeah.
But also, like, I grew up in the military, military brat, and my research is on student veterans. And I've always wanted to write a character with this military connection that wasn't a war story. I didn't want to write a war story. I didn't want to write about, it's not about the military service. It's about this person who
Right,
had
yeah.
this role, and it's in a unit where they're the people who go rescue people. That's their whole job. They're the
Yeah.
rescuers. And like, whether it's civilians for like natural disasters or folks in the military, like, that's this unit. And so anyway, that's all part of this character. But I'm sure my editor on the first draft was like, "Why is there so much about veteran centers in here?" And I was like, "I wrote a whole book about veteran centers."
Love that. I'm excited.
That is exciting. I mean, I love a sibling's best friend because that
Yeah.
just adds like a whole dynamic to the story that like you never know what's going to happen. But yeah, I do. Oh, I'm excited about that because he was a dynamic character that I really
Yeah.
wanted to learn more about.
He is. I mean, I don't know how much can I swear on here. I don't know how much with
Oh yeah,
the
we have no
yeah.
filters.
Fuck boy. Like that's who he is.
He
Like that's how I always describe him. He's a fuck boy. And that's how he starts the book. And that is never shamed, and it isn't in the new book. But she is less experienced. Like she's only been with this one person. And
Yeah.
again, their dynamic to me is so fun. And he is such a walking green flag throughout the book, and is such a great compliment to Willow that I'll be really pumped for folks to read this one once I finish writing it.
Well, that sounds very exciting. Well, thank you, Denise, for joining Amanda and I on this Spotlight Author Edition. That none of that came out right, but everybody knows what I mean. Thank
was
you.
perfect, just the way you said it. Thanks so much for having me. This was wonderfully fun conversation.
Until next time, happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.